What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Between the Tackles podcast. That's right, you're hearing my voice again. I'm back. Before I get into it, I just want to just say thank you again to Gary V for taking the time to come out and chat with us on our last episode. It was a great conversation. Be sure to check it out. Also, check out all our other episodes. We're everywhere. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. Between the Tackles, search it. Give us a 5-star rating. Write a review. Subscribe. Download. Do it all. Continue to help us grow. Social media platforms. X. TikTok. Instagram. Facebook even. At Tackles Pod. Between the Tackles on Facebook. Find us. Video clips. Episodes. All those announcements are going to be out there. Interact with us. We love it. I'm back. So happy to be back sitting in this chair with my good pal, Manish. How are you doing today, Manish, after round one of the NFL draft?
I'm doing great. Full disclosure, I was bored for the first half of the first round yesterday, and then things really picked up, started heating up maybe a little before the first round with the Rams pick, but then in the back half of the draft, just a lot of movement, a lot of trades, and it's always fun. And I'm also a huge fan of the 8-minute per pick new rule in place. Everything flew by. I think the first round went by in less than 3 hours.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, especially if you're a fan of a team at the end of the round, like I am, having to wait so long, and I was bracing for the trade back. I was bracing for the trade pack, but it didn't happen. We'll get into that here in a little bit on this episode of Between the Tackles when we get to breaking down our NFL first round that occurred last night. But before we do, we'd be amiss if we didn't bring up the biggest news in the NFL that, in my opinion, you know, leading up to the draft really overshadowed a lot of what went on in terms of the, pre-NFL draft festivities. And that is the latest on the Diana Russini, Mike Vrabel scandal, saga, however you want to call it. It's a story that will not die or go away as more information, more pictures come out of Vrabel and Russini. And, you know, the pictures that came out yesterday clearly indicate a long-term, you know, quote-unquote relationship, affair, however you want to classify it, long-term inappropriate connection between the Patriots head coach and Diana Russini. And just before I pass it off to you, Manish, to get your thoughts on it, for me as a fan of the New England Patriots, as a big fan of Mike Vrabel, as an elite head coach in this NFL. That's been a fun debate between Manish and I in the group chat. it's hard to watch. It's hard to see. It's now impacting the football operations with Mike Vrabel stepping away, starting on day three of the NFL draft for counseling to be with his family. Football aside, it's the right thing for him to do, as a person to try to, whatever went on. I mean, the press conference that Mike Vrabel gave the night, right before the NFL draft kicked off last night. Interesting timing. I'll get your thoughts on that, Manish. But, it's impacting that. He's focusing on his family. In that press conference, again, I don't know why they needed to do it. He didn't say anything new. Like, there was no admission of guilt. There was no, whatever you want to call it. There was no admission. So, for me, I can read between the lines. I'm not stupid. I don't think anybody out there is stupid to read into what occurred here. But what Vrabel's thoughts and his comments and everything since the initial reaction to the post from the Page Six a couple weeks ago, it's just not a good look for both of them. Manish, go ahead and give me your thoughts on the elite head coach up here in New England.
Yeah, it's the pictures that have subsequently come out on New York Post, maybe even TMZ, had some additional pictures. They clearly don't paint a flattering picture of the relationship between Mike Vrabel and Diana Russini. And, as we have said in the past, neither one of us, frankly, cares about what they did in their personal lives. I think it's pretty abundantly clear that there was some sort of longstanding affair between the two of them. But that notwithstanding, I really think that the New England Patriots fumbled this for the past 2.5 weeks. Their PR strategy has been, to borrow a word from Mike Vrabel, laughable. I don't quite understand why Vrabel needed to release statements on three separate occasions, I believe over the course of 48 to 72 hours. He initially had the statement on the first day of off-season workouts when the players were supposed to talk to the media, and he released a statement, then had an off-the-record, or I guess a session without cameras with reporters, in which he essentially said nothing other than it's a private matter between him and his family, and he needed to have some difficult conversations, which, by the way, really threw Diana Russini under the bus, maybe unwittingly so, maybe it was strategic, I don't know. But in a few short minutes, Mike Vrabel essentially torpedoed everything that Diana Russini had written in her letter of resignation that she posted on X to The Athletic and The Athletic editors, New York Times editors. But that aside, the notion of then releasing a separate statement to ESPN, I believe a day later, in a story that was released at midnight, was Bush League. And then to further compound matters, making Mike Vrabel, as you said, available about a half hour before the start of the 2026 NFL draft, in which, again, he said nothing other than he needs to take care of his family and the family is first. I don't think anybody has any kind of issue with that. And I really do think that the interest in this story is not necessarily centered on the fact that there was a longstanding relationship between this head coach and the reporter. I really do think the groundswell of angst and vitriol in some respects centers on the fact that Diana Russini is a reporter who clearly was in a compromised relationship with a source. And, you know, subsequently over the past 2.5 weeks, people have dug up stories that she's written that have had links to Mike Vrabel and the Patriots or the Tennessee Titans. One particular story in 2021 really jumped out to me, and that was when the Titans were in pursuit of Julio Jones, then a member of the Atlanta Falcons. Russini posted that the Falcons were weighing offers, including a first-round pick, and that the Titans were a long shot to get him. The reality is that the Titans ultimately traded for then Falcons wide receiver Julio Jones for a second and fourth round pick. They also got a sixth round pick in return, but clearly not a first round pick. And if you're a reporter and you're reporting that the Falcons have at least one first round pick offer on the table, and you're a team who may be interested in Julio Jones and sees that report, you may think, you know, that's too rich for me. I'm not going to jump into the Julio sweepstakes. And that essentially narrows the competition for Jones. It puts the Titans and Mike Vrabel in a very advantageous position. So people ask, well, how does this affect me? What do I care that two people had an extramarital affair? I don't think that's the issue. The point is that this directly can influence how NFL transactions occur. And this Julio Jones story, I think, is a perfect example, a perfect case study on how Diana Russini could use her position to, in effect, alter Julio Jones's trade value. And I think that's what the uproar is about at this point. Again, what happens personally is up to them. And because Mike Vrabel is now taking time away, at least one significant day in the NFL calendar, the third day of the NFL draft, away from the team, it becomes a football story. I don't know how long Vrabel is going to be away from the team. I don't know if this is some sort of, back channel punishment. Roger Goodell has already said that as of now, the NFL will not be investigating Vrabel for conduct detrimental or conduct detrimental to the personal conduct policy. But I think if you're smart about this and you're the NFL and you see how this relationship could have actually impacted NFL events and transactions, then perhaps there will be a subsequent penalty levied down from the league. But as of right now, they say no. It's just a big mess. I don't think the Patriots did any favors to Vrabel by giving it more oxygen over the last 3 days. I don't think Vrabel did any favors to Diana Russini, whose credibility now as a unbiased, objective reporter has clearly gone by the wayside. Just an unfortunate circumstance all around, an ugly circumstance, frankly. And the fact that these photos keep popping up doesn't help matters. I don't know when the story is going to die, but what I do know is that as of right now, neither party has said much of anything other than a defiant letter, which means nothing now based off of what Mike Vrabel said, which was, again, not much.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it would be nice to just have somebody take accountability. Like, I think Vrabel is trying to do it in so many words, where he's indicating that he's going to go to his family. To me, I can understand why Diana has not said anything. Like, let's be honest. Like, everybody knows now. And, you know, as of last night, she deactivated her ex account. So she's not even present on the platform anymore, which is, you know, kind of a big deal. And it's because people on the Twitter sphere or the X sphere, whatever you want to call it, are digging up old tweets about from her. And all of it, given what we know now, paints a really, really bad image as to what was going on over the last, you know, six or so years when, you know, the pictures prove that there was something going on here. You know, as a Patriots fan, I just want it obviously to just die. It's not going to. This is going to be something that's going to be talked about now for months. It's not going anywhere. This is now, you know, burned into NFL history, so to speak. It'll always be a, you know, if you're thinking about the history of the 2026 offseason in 10 years, the first thing you're going to think about is this scandal that went on. And it's unfortunate that, you know, someone's career is ruined. Now a head coach is being taken away from his duties. It truly is unfortunate. And one of the big things that stands out to me is obviously seeing the difference in Vrabel's response initially when this first happened to now. I just hope that when he addressed the players of the New England Patriots, that his message was consistent, and it hasn't, there was no like chance that he was trying to lie or escape accountability or anything like that, because that is one way you just immediately lose the locker room. You immediately lose the locker room for the Patriots. And, you know, I hope that doesn't happen, because in terms of football, I'm a really big fan of what Mike Vrabel does on the field.
Yeah. Look, I don't think it's going to make any kind of difference when practice begins, you know, whether that's practice in OTAs or training camp, preseason, or when the actual season comes along. There's going to be guys in that locker room who are going to disagree with his personal choices, and it's understandable. You've got 50, 60 guys in there, different personalities, different backgrounds. So I don't think, that is, you know, unusual. There'll be people that disagree with him, but just because they disagree with his personal life choices doesn't mean that they're not going to play hard.
Right.
It's their career. That's, you know,
it's a respect thing. It's a respect thing, though.
They might not respect him. I mean, I'm sure there's guys in there that won't ever respect him because of the personal element of it. And some guys who maybe have done similar things that won't care, or maybe guys who haven't done similar things that won't care. At the end of the day, they're in the business of winning football games. I know that sounds really callous, you know, because this affects other people. You know, this affects spouses, this affects children. Mm-hmm. It's much more important than football in the grand scheme of things. But from a New England Patriots perspective, they want to know, is Mike Vrabel going to be the same guy he was last year in terms of how he motivates his players? Is he going to be the same coach? They want to win football games. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest. There's a lot of guys in this league who coach who are not choir boys. And again, take out real life. Real life, I think this stuff matters, just from a personal perspective. But in football terms, Birch, you are a diehard, lifelong Patriots fan. I know personally you don't agree with these choices that he's made, but I also know that that's not going to stop you and the, you know, thousands of other New England Patriot fans from rooting for the New England Patriots and Mike Vrabel every Sunday when September rolls around. I think people, frankly, are interested in this story to a certain degree, but when football starts, they're going to be rooting for him. They're going to be rooting for the team, just like they've always have and always will, regardless. Short of an O.J. Simpson type of situation, I don't think. I don't really think this is going to impact how Patriot fans feel about Mike Vrabel.
I'll be rooting for that elite head coach as long as he's the head coach of my team. So let's put that story that overshadowed the draft aside. We're going to let it stop overshadowing our draft talk. So let's move right in to breaking down the first round of the NFL draft. You hit it off the top, Manish, about the 8 minutes per pick. I love it. I always thought that the NFL draft dragged this thing out too much, even splitting up, going from 2 to 3 days, which I think they did at some point in the last decade or so. It's just like, just make the picks, please. I just want to know, find out where these players go. I don't care about all the other minutiae that goes on in the show that goes on with the NFL draft. I get that the NFL's got to make a spectacle out of it because right now there's nothing else to talk about with the NFL except this year, but I digress. Some just quick notes. You know, you mentioned off the top, Manish, about the trades. There were a total of 8 in the first round, which I live for that. I live for the movement. I live for the changes that occur in the draft as a fan. What was interesting was that 5 of the last 7 picks were traded, which is wild to me. So I don't know. I was entertained. I was entertained in the NFL draft. Like you said, early on, it was kind of status quo, what everybody expected. And, you know, before we start getting into kind of some winners and some losers of some teams, Manish, got some value picks here that occurred. And I just want to get your take on, what you think where value was found in this draft, where maybe we didn't see it coming.
Yeah, I think Todd Bowles was doing backflips when he saw that Miami edge rusher Reuben Bain made it to 15. There are plenty of quote-unquote experts who believe that Bain would be a top 10 pick, maybe a top 8 pick. And for him to slide to 15, I don't know if it's because he reportedly has short arms or not. But what I do know is that the Buccaneers got a tremendous player in the middle of the first round. And I don't even think they believe that was possible unless they wanted to trade up for Bain. I love the pick. I mean, it's almost like Bain landed in Jason Light's lap and they didn't fumble the ball. It's a terrific pick. I think he's going to be an immediate contributor in Todd Bowles' defense, and I think he's going to make a significant impact rushing the passer and against a run.
Definitely. I mean, we talked in our mock drafts about how the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, to help erase what happened last season, to address that defense early in this draft, and they did that. And, a second one that, we identified here on between the tackles is Akeem Mesidor going to the Chargers. What are your thoughts on him?
Well, it's Reuben Bain's teammate, so another Miami edge rusher. And we had talked in the run-up, Burge, to this draft about where he would go, because the production has clearly been there, but he's 25 years old, and that sometimes gives teams pause. Because when it's time to get that second contract, he's creeping up on 30 now. Does it limit his shelf life in the NFL? I think the Chargers, frankly, did a smart thing. I think that Jim Harbaugh knew that this was a player, much like Reuben Bain, that can make an immediate contribution against the pass and the run. And sure, he's a few years older, but I think you're going to get a lot of high-end play from him for several years. It is not a 2 or 3 year career we're talking about. He can carve out a nice long career, regardless of the fact that he's a little bit older than the other prospects in this draft. I just love the fact that both these Miami edge rushers, they go at 15, Chargers take Mesidor at 22. Great value. You're going to get immediate production from these guys. If you're ranking your players from just a skill set standpoint, regardless of position, in my estimation, both of these guys are probably in the top dozen picks of this draft.
Absolutely. And, he's got a great mentor there in L.A. to kind of learn the ropes of the NFL and Khalil Mack. So, and a slam dunk play for the L.A. Chargers. Let's move on to our winners of the first round. I'm going to start off with a team that we talked about in our mock draft about having basically one of two ways to go. And that's the Carolina Panthers. That we knew that they needed to address offensive talent, given what they did in free agency and how their season kind of ended last year. And they get Monroe Freeling at, I don't even remember what pick it was. I was just so happy with this pick.
You were 19.
19th overall in a draft where a lot of these old linemen were going in the first round. They could have gone skill position, wide receiver here, but given how this round played out, they're going to find value at that position later in this draft. Whereas offensive line was clearly a target for a lot of teams in the first round, and they address a need positionally. we were talking a little bit beforehand here. We could say that, you know, it was a slam dunk of a pick, but Monroe Freeling, if he shakes out there for the Panthers, is going to really help out, you know, Bryce Young continue his development and the Panthers' development after last season.
Yeah, I like it. Freeling was a guy in mock drafts in the run-up last week or so, was getting a lot of buzz. There was talk whether he could even be a top 10 pick. I think he's got a little bit more development left to go, but clearly this is an indication that their right tackle, Ike Ikwanu, is not healthy. Their offensive tackle, I should say. They did address tackle in free agency, but clearly that's more of a short-term situation. Freeling could be a long-term answer at that position. So you knew that Dan Morgan was going offense. He's got a long-standing track record of picking offensive players in the first round, and he did not disappoint with Freeling.
Absolutely. Who's our second winner, Manish?
Yeah, I'm going with the New York Giants. Look, 5-10, two top 10 picks after trading Dexter Lawrence to the Cincinnati Bengals. They get the number 10 pick. They get Arvell Reese at 5. Many teams believed he was the number one overall player in this draft. The fact that he slid to 5 was a godsend for John Harbaugh and Joe Shane. I believe that the Giants had Arvell Reese as their number one overall player. And then at 10, they address offensive line. I believe we had Francis Maui Noah, I should say, from Miami, the right tackle, going to them at 5. In reality, the Giants get him at 10. He could slide into guard. Right now, they did sign Jermaine Illuminor, their right tackle, to a 3-year deal in free agency. So in the short term, you could have the rookie play at guard. Ultimately, I do think he's going to be a tackle. So you come away with maybe the cleanest tackle prospect in this draft and maybe the best player overall, Ohio State linebacker Arvell Reese, in this draft. At least on paper, it looks like a home run for John Harbaugh in his first season with the New York Giants.
I couldn't agree more. The fact that Reese slid to 5, I thought he might go 4 to, you know, Robert Saleh's Titans. That obviously did not happen. So yeah, falls right into the Giants' lap there at 5. I think he's going to be a great player for them for a long time. Next winner I have, it's the New York Jets. Now, there might be a little pushback on this one, given, you know, where the Jets and how they, you know, went a little bit more offensive than I think you and I both expected. Early on in this draft, they do get David Bailey at 2, which we all kind of foresaw coming up, you know, going into our mock draft season there. So they address a major need on the edge there in New York. At 16, they kind of surprised some people by taking a tight end, Kenyon Sadiq. You know, I love this player coming in, especially after his performance at the combine. I was hoping he was going to, you know, slip later and that, my Patriots might be able to get a weapon for Drake May late in the draft. That does not happen. So I think getting another young weapon in there is a good thing, albeit at a position that maybe was not a position of need, you know, given the fact that they took a tight end last year pretty early in the draft. And this third move for me is probably what sealed the deal for me, making them a winner this year. And that was the Jets trading up to pick 30 back into the third round by giving up 33 and 179, which happens to be a very late fifth round pick. And they take Omar Cooper. We had talked about the Jets wanting to get a second option, you know, across from Garrett Wilson, and Omar Cooper fills that need, and the Jets get up and preserve the ability to give him a fifth year option should Omar Cooper pan out the way the Jets are hoping for. So in terms of the trade is the main reason why I really like what the Jets did last night.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that I'm bearish on what the Jets did, because I do love the David Bailey pick. Frankly, I would have loved the Arvell Reese pick. Couldn't go wrong. If they drafted someone other than one of those two guys, I think you could be critical of them. But Bailey, to me, you know, historically has been a pressure machine in college, and I don't anticipate that changing at the NFL level. He's going to bring heat on the quarterback. The question, of course, becomes how stout can he be against a run, because that's clearly a deficiency of his. It's also a deficiency of Will McDonald, who they have on the other side rushing. So running the ball against the Jets could be easy, you know, for lack of a better word. We'll see what they do in day two. They only have one pick in day two as of right now. But from a pass rushing standpoint, can't go wrong with Bailey. Love him. I don't understand the Kenyon Sadiq pick. I really don't. You touched on the fact they had drafted Mason Taylor last year with a 42nd overall pick, second round pick, and now they're drafting a tight end with the 16th pick. You saw the Raiders several years ago do that back-to-back years, tight end in the second round, kid from Notre Dame, and then they come back with Brock Bowers in the first round the following year. I don't like it. You know, when I think of how football is played right now, you can say, yeah, more teams are employing 12 personnel, which is two tight ends, but by and large, Frank Reich, their new offensive coordinator, has not employed 12 personnel. He's going to have to obviously change it now because Sadiq is a part of the equation. I would have taken a wide receiver, whether it was Casey Concepcion, who went 24th to the Browns, or Mekhi Lemon, who's primarily a slot guy, but clearly a guy with high production at the college level. The Eagles thought enough of him to trade up. I would have taken a receiver there. If you're looking for a weapon for your future quarterback, you know, Geno Smith this year, but whoever they're going to draft next year, I just don't understand the tight end pick. I really don't. I know athletically, Sadiq is a freak. We've discussed that ad nauseum. You know, did exceedingly well at the combine. He has had drops issues. I don't know how much of a diverse route tree he has. Geno Smith would probably be looking for him in the seam. Straight line speed is great, but I don't like the pick. I really don't like the pick at 16. And Omar Cooper, to me, is going to have a solid career. When I think of the Jets, you know, Jets fans can appreciate this. I think of a guy who can be a solid number two wide receiver in the NFL, like Jericho Cotchery, which is a guy that Jet fans loved. He was just a very solid player, not a difference-making player in any way, but just a very good player. Cooper has drawn comparisons to Deebo Samuel. A couple years ago, the Jets drafted Malachi Corley, who drew examples and comparisons to Deebo Samuel. Obviously, Corley did not live up to that. I just think that anytime a wide receiver who's tough and gritty can go across the middle, comes through in the draft, they automatically get compared to Deebo Samuel. And Deebo Samuel doesn't come along very often. It's a wide receiver class that is very deep. I don't think they needed to trade up to get Cooper, but that's clearly the guy they identified. And as you said, they gave up, I believe, the last pick in the fifth round. So they didn't give up that much to move up from their early day two pick into the first round. So I don't have a problem with that. They clearly identified Cooper as a guy that they wanted. I just don't know at the next level if he's going to be anything other than a solid player. And I do believe that. I do believe he will be a quality player. He won't be a bust. I have my questions about Sadiq. You know, it's funny when you talk about tight ends who have a lot of athleticism and they score really well. I think of Jonnu Smith, frankly. I don't know if it's an apples-to-apples comparison, but Jonnu Smith was an athletic freak coming out of college. And while he had some moments in recent years, specifically with the Miami Dolphins and Atlanta Falcons, his career has been underwhelming by and large, given you know what some people thought he could be. I don't like it. The defense was terrible last year. I don't think having three first-round picks and only one of them being a defensive player makes a lot of sense, just given how porous they were. They do have one pick. I believe it's 44th today. I'm assuming that they'll draft a defensive player, but there was if they were going to trade back into the first round, there were safeties available. Emmanuel McNeil Warren from Toledo comes to mind. There are cornerbacks available, linebackers available. The Jets need all of this. And to take a receiver and a tight end, I don't think it makes any sense. I really don't. I think Darren Mooji's going to do a good job of stockpiling draft picks. But let's not forget they traded away two Pro Bowl players to get some of these picks. They traded away Quinnen Williams and Sauce Gardner, and you're replacing these guys with a tight end and a number two wide receiver. I don't understand it. I would have gone heavy defense. Frankly, I would if they were going to trade back in the into the first round, I would have drafted a defensive player at 16 and then traded back into the first round to draft another defensive player. You could have gotten three defensive starters out of day one, and they chose to get their second tight end in 2 years and a number two wide receiver. I don't understand it. I know Jet fans are excited. That's great. Every fan base is excited. I love the Bailey pick. I think the Sadiq pick was not the right move, and Cooper, to me, does not move the needle.
We shall see. We'll see who's right here, if they're a winner or a loser, because clearly you differ in opinion on what I think. We got two more winners here, and I'm just going to give them to you right off the top here, and then Manish, I'll get your thoughts on them. We got the Cowboys as winners, getting Caleb Downs at 11, and also with making some trades. And we have the Steelers as a winner, you know, getting a offensive tackle in Max Ehud. Not sure. I can't even say the guy's name. I can't do it.
Ehud Nachor.
There we go. I got it. Finally, I got it. You know, drafting an offensive tackle, given the injuries that they've sustained on the offensive line, which is, really good, you know, despite the scenario with the Eagles leapfrogging them on Mekhi Lemon. So I'm going to get your thoughts on those two squads before we move on to the fun part, which is the losers.
Yeah, I like what the Cowboys did. I arguably, they had the best night, in my estimation. They get Caleb Downs, who is probably a top five player in this draft when it's all said and done, at 11. They gave up 2 fifth-round picks to move up from 12 to 11, but they recoup 2 fourth-round picks by making a deal with the Eagles later to move down a few spots, and they get Malachi Lawrence. They bolster a defense that was putrid last year. Two immediate starters. You know, I just talked about how the Jets needed defensive help and came away with one defensive starter. The Cowboys, with both of their picks, wisely added 2 defensive players that can immediately help Brian Schottenheimer. I loved it. I really loved it. I know Jerry Jones gets a lot of flack from people, but to get Downs, Malachi Lawrence, and then flip 2 fifth-round picks to get 2 fourth-round picks is... a master stroke on paper. We'll see if these guys can play. I mean, I know Caleb Downs can play. I absolutely loved it. I think it makes a lot of sense. The Steelers, to me, look, they were lampooned on draft night because Ian Rappaport from NFL Network reported that the Steelers were actually on the phone with Mekhi Lemon when the Eagles tried to call Mekhi Lemon. Apparently, the Steelers were unaware that the Eagles had traded up in position to get him, and it's great intel from Howie Roseman and the Eagles scouting department. They obviously had a strong inkling that either the Steelers or the Chargers were interested in Lemon, and they leapfrogged both of them, and they got their guy. We could talk in the next few minutes about whether that was a wise choice, but the intel was great. The intel was exceptional. That being said, to me, Ikanachor, a guy who's only been playing football for a handful of years, a native of Nigeria, has incredible talent. And if they can be patient with him, I don't think you can expect immediate results, but if you can be patient with him for a year or so, I think it could pay off. There's a high ceiling there. So even though it appears that the Steelers preferred to draft Mekhi Lemon, they may have lucked out by getting the offensive tackle because they're going to need an offensive tackle. Broderick Jones, their starting tackle is dealing with a neck issue. Who knows how healthy he'll be, how quickly, but this is a kid with a sky-high ceiling, and I love the pick. If they're patient and they coach him well, he could be a home run.
Absolutely. We'll see. But I want to move on to our fun segment, and that's where we talk about the losers of the draft. I love being a good hate watch. We're going to start right off the top. I think this is an obvious one, and that's the LA Rams selecting Ty Simpson at 13. Look, we had in our mocks quite a bit of Ty Simpson going in the first round, but we had it going late in the 30s for a trade up for a team to sneak in and grab him to get, the ability to issue the 5th-year option on him. I don't think anybody had him going 13 to the Rams. They have Matthew Stafford there. They're still in a win now window. You know, they want to provide some talent for Matthew Stafford to continue to, maximize what's left there, and they end up selecting a quarterback. And, for me, it was very telling about how some of the Rams felt about it. Sean McVay in the post-draft conference did not seem happy. He seemed very agitated, with the pick. It'll be interesting to see if there's any kind of divide there that goes forward. I think McVay even came out and said, we didn't do much homework on Simpson before the draft because they have Matthew Stafford, right? But it's interesting. I want to, Nish, why don't you give me your thoughts on it?
I thought it sucked. I did not like this pick. And I'm sorry to be so bold and brash and simple about it. I think it makes no sense on any level, to be quite honest with you. This is a player in Ty Simpson who has had 15 career starts. History has told us that quarterbacks who have that few starts are rarely successful players. They're certainly not going to turn into starting quarterbacks. And the Rams are a legitimate Super Bowl contending team. They were a few plays away from being in position to go to the Super Bowl this season and this year before. And Matthew Stafford, while he's playing at a high level, as evidenced by the fact that he was the NFL MVP, he doesn't have that much time left, whether that's one season, two seasons, who knows? Why not get somebody that can help your team now? Maybe it's helping Stafford specifically by drafting a wide receiver. Maybe it's bolstering your defense to help the entire team. I don't understand the logic of drafting a player who's not going to play, even if Matthew Stafford is injured and misses a little bit of time. You think they're going to put Ty Simpson in there? Absolutely not. The guy has 15 career starts. He didn't start, I think, until his fourth season in college. And so if you play this out logically and say that Matthew Stafford plays the entire 26th season and he plays reasonably well and he decides to play again in 2027, but even if he doesn't, let's say he retires after 2026, that means that you're going to have Ty Simpson in 2027, a guy who has had 15 career starts over the course of 5 years in college and the pros, be your answer when you could have invested resources to draft a quarterback in what everyone believes is a much deeper quarterback class in 2027. The reality is that he could sit for 2 years, and that would mean that he would have played 15 or started 15 games over a six-year period. I don't see how it makes any sense. I understand that general manager Les Snead is very good friends with Simpson's dad, who's the coach at UT Martin. That's all well and good, but you could clearly tell watching Sean McVay's body language in the post-pick press conference that this was not something that he really was excited about. Now, I know you have to tread lightly because it is Matthew Stafford's team, and I believe that McVay said that, so you don't want to tick off Stafford, but I think it goes beyond that. I really do not imagine Sean McVay thinking, hey, we're a couple pieces away to really having a shot here to get to the Super Bowl in 2026. Let's get a developmental backup quarterback who has 15 career starts. I don't understand it. I thought it was an awful decision. And frankly, you could have gotten him after 13. I don't care what anybody else says about teams interested trading up at 13. I mean, I wouldn't have taken him if I were the Rams at 20, let alone 13. I just thought it was the most curious pick. I thought it was a poor decision, and I think that history will ultimately show that it was the wrong decision.
He's coming in to compete with Stetson Bennett for the backup job. That was what was said after the draft. Yeah, very interesting move. I'm very curious to see where it plays out. Second loser. I have the Philadelphia Eagles as a loser of this draft. Now, they did trade up to get Lemon, who should slot right in and potentially be a productive player for the Philadelphia Eagles out of the gate. They signed a bunch of wide receivers this year. I mean, if this move is anything more to indicate that A.J. Brown is gone and will be a member of the New England Patriots on June 1st, they just keep throwing gas on the fire. Let's just make this thing official. But at the end of the day, we've been pretty vocal on here about the Eagles needing help on that offensive line. And there were still some tackles available, some guards, highly rated guards available to them, even if they didn't make a trade up. They had to trade with their rival in the division to do it. I'm not an Eagles fan, but if I was an Eagles fan, given the way the moves have played out this offseason with Hollywood Brown coming in, Dontavian Wicks coming in, you still have Devonta Smith there, and knowing that Lane Johnson is a year older and that your offensive line was not good at the end of last season, I would have much rather them taken a prospect to bolster that offensive line. Manish, the resident Eagles fan, your thoughts?
I agree with you. I actually think that the player that the Steelers took right after, the player we just talked about a few moments ago, Maxi Chanakor, would have been a better fit because He does need a little bit more seasoning, and he wouldn't have to start right away because Lane Johnson is still playing, presumably for just one more season. I thought that would have made a lot of sense. The Patriots took a tackle later in the draft, but I really think Max would have been the player that I would have chosen there. That's not a slight on Lemon in the sense that Lemon's going to be a good player. The guy catches everything in sight. Now, he's not explosive, but he's a good feel for finding zones. I think the comp that people have thrown out there is Amon-Ra St. Brown. Well, St. Brown was a fourth-round pick. He wasn't the 20th overall pick in the draft. It's a heavy investment for a slot receiver. You know, it's funny because I remember a few months ago when we had Dave Richard from CBS Sports on, his comp for Lemon was JSN, Jackson Smith and Jigba. And if that comes to fruition, then Howie Roseman looks like a genius. I just don't think you're going to see immediate value. Part of that is I'm not a big believer in the quarterback. I don't think Jalen Hurts is going to bring out the best in Mekhi Lemon. I think that Eagles will have a new quarterback in 2027. So we'll see what the real Mekhi Lemon can do beginning in 2027, in my estimation. Again, not a slight on the player. I think he's a good player. I like the idea of that type of investment at 15. Some people disagree. Some people believed he was a top 12 pick, maybe even closer to 10. I just think that the Eagles, as you outlined, Burge, really had glaring needs at offensive line, tackle specifically, but they could have gone guard as well, and they didn't do it. We'll see if Howie Roseman made the right decision. The last several years, he's frankly been on a heater. The guy has been lights out. Devontae Smith was a top 10 pick. He hit a home run on Smith, but Howie Roseman's track record for wide receivers is not very good. So we'll see if Lemon falls in under the umbrella of the Devontae Smith pick or some of the other poor picks like Jalen Reagor instead of Justin Jefferson, which I know that Eagles fans will never let Howie Roseman forget.
Well, let's talk about Justin Jefferson's next team. Our next loser is the Minnesota Vikings. Why are they a loser, Manish?
Look, they took Caleb Banks from Florida at 18. There's a glaring need at safety, and I felt like the prevailing sentiment was that they were going to take Dylan Thienemann, the Oregon safety, or even if they went with McNeil Warren from Toledo at safety. That seemed to make a lot of sense. Now, Caleb Banks, if he were completely healthy, I wouldn't have a problem with this pick. But this is a guy who re-injured his foot. He only played 3 games last season. Physically imposing, 6'6", 320, got very long arms. But when you have a man that big who re-injures his foot, has foot issues, clearly, you have to wonder whether he can stay healthy. And the other factor is that Kevin O'Connell is making these picks. Remember, they do not have a general manager. They fired their general manager a few months ago. So I don't know how much KOC is leaning on his scouting department. I don't know how much of it is just, his observations over the last several months. But again, it's a boomer bust pick. It would scare me that a guy that big has had now two significant injuries, or one injury twice to the same foot. I would have stayed away.
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, whether, like you said, boom or bust, we'll see what happens. We got two more losers here before we decide to get ready for round two of the NFL draft.
Well, we're going to do the grades. Don't forget, we're doing the grades.
Grades.
I've got my red marker out.
All right. Two losers, and then we'll get to the grades. I'm clearly rusty from missing an episode, but let's do it. The AFC East, rivals of my New England Patriots, are two losers of this draft, and I am so happy about it. Obviously, I'm going to sit here and tell you that the Buffalo Bills are losers. Now, they did add some picks in the mid-rounds of the NFL draft, but they traded down 3 times, including a trade with the New England Patriots, to ensure that Caleb Lamu ended up as a tackle for the New England Patriots. But they didn't end up making a first-round pick, and I was very surprised by this, and reading what some of the fans were saying on Twitter, they weren't happy about it. This is a team that is like the Rams in a win now kind of situation with their quarterback, Josh Allen, who is in desperate need of more weapons on the offense. They did acquire DJ Moore in the offseason, so they did add there, but really nothing else. And this was an opportunity to add a wide receiver. this is some names that are sitting out there, you know, late in the draft here. We terminations, we'll get to them. Omar Cooper was there. Denzel Boston was there, you know, among others. They had an opportunity to make a selection for one of those guys, and they didn't. And, you know, for me, it's, I'm happy on paper that they didn't make a first-round pick. But if I'm a Bills fan, I'm not too thrilled, especially given how their offseason has gone with Brandon Bean, with the firing of McDermott and the hiring of Brady, and how Bean stayed when a lot of the fans didn't want him to stay. If I'm a Buffalo fan, I'm not happy. And then on the other end, the Miami Dolphins, look, they needed, we said in our mock drafts that they were going to go defense, right? We had them going defense, defense, defense. They have a defensive head coach. And then at 12, they reached for Caden Proctor, a guy we had kind of going later in the first round. Could be a good player, but I think that they could have gotten him later in the draft, later in the first round, I should say. And their defense needs a lot of help given, you know, the players that have exited there this year. Manish, your thoughts on those guys?
Yeah, look, the Bills didn't take a player, so I'm going to give him an incomplete. I understand where you're coming from, Burge, but we'll see what happens. The Dolphins, I think they're going to be in the running for the number one overall pick. I like Proctor. We'll see if he can stay in shape. That's been the big bugaboo. And when it's all said and done, I think the Jets and Dolphins are going to be in the mix for the number one overall pick.
We shall see. We shall see. I'm happy. I'm happy the Bills are a loser on this list. Manish, kick off the segment I forgot about.
Let's do the grades. Let me run through the top five.
Just run through them.
All right. Fernando Mendoza. I'm giving the Raiders an A. A weak quarterback class. They need a quarterback. I think there's some potential there. We'll see if Clint Kubiak can bring the best out of them. I'm going to give the Cardinals an A. I'm frankly a little bit surprised that they pulled the trigger on what I think they should have done, which is draft Notre Dame running back Jeremiah Love. Mike LaFleur, offensive-minded guy, gets a dynamic piece to the puzzle. They've got a lot of other pieces to fill in, including quarterback. Probably won't happen until next year. Love the pick. Love the player. Another A. You know, I'm handing out a. I'm a tough grader, and I skipped over the Jets because, as I said earlier, David Bailey A. I might give the Jets an A plus.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, you're not
saying something good about the Jets.
You're not gonna get that often. But look, I love the player. I love the player. Again, maybe not great against the run. Consistent heat on the quarterback. Proven track record. I don't think that's gonna change. Difference making player. From day one, love it. So I'll give the Jets an A plus. I'll give the Cardinals an A. I'm gonna give the Titans a B plus. Carnell Tate goes to them. I like the player. I thought they were going a different direction, but Brian Daboll's probably ecstatic that he gets another weapon, and Cam Ward's probably very happy that they continue to upgrade the offense around him. You know how I feel about the Giants and the picks that they made. Arvell Reese going fifth, that's a steal. Love it. He's going to make an immediate impact for John Harbaugh. I'm giving that an A plus as well. So both New York teams, with their first picks, get A pluses.
All right, I'll take over for you. We got the Chiefs at six who trade up. I'm going to give that one a C plus. I didn't think that they needed to do that. I think they gave up quite a bit to trade up for Delane. I think they could have waited, and I feel like that it almost felt like they made a trade to make a trade. So C plus for the Kansas City Chiefs. Seven. Sonny Styles to the Commanders. I'm going to give that one an A minus. I think he's going to be a great fit for Dan Quinn there in Washington. He's a versatile player. He can do it all on that defense. I think he's going to be a great fit. So A minus there for the Commanders. Eight for the Saints. And this is going to be a sentimental grade because this guy might be now my favorite player in this draft. All right. I'm giving the Saints an A plus for drafting Jordan Tyson, wide receiver. We were texting during that segment there, you know, how emotional he was going up on stage. And for me, it was like looking at this kid, I'm like, he seems like a normal guy. He's dressed normal. He just had a shirt and tie on, a nice easy coat. He looked like a normal, level-headed guy. And I think he's going to be a great weapon for that offense and Kellen Moore down there in New Orleans. So A+, Jordan Tyson, a little bit of sentimental factoring in there. The Browns trading down. Look, we said that they needed to address wide receiver, and they needed to address offensive tackle. They get Spencer Fano. I'm going to give that one an A. I think they they took one of the better tackles in the draft, and they addressed a significant need for that offense. So yeah, give the Browns an A. I'm gonna just at 10. We got the Giants picking again, like you said, with Reese getting the A+. I'm also gonna give the Giants an A here for Francis Maui-Noah, again addressing their offensive line. To you, Manish.
All right. You know, I don't know when I became so soft, but number 11, the Cowboys trade from 12 to 11 to take Caleb Downs. You know, I waxed poetic about Caleb Downs earlier, and that is why, for the only time in my life, I am giving somebody an A++.
Caleb Downs. It's the Cowboys.
Yes, how about them Cowboys? I grew up despising the Dallas Cowboys. Now I frankly don't care, but A++. Love the player. The fact that they got him outside the top 10, only had to give up two fifth-round picks to get him. Just a masterstroke. I mean, just a great, great move. Love the player, and the grade reflects that. Nobody's getting higher than an A++, spoiler. The Dolphins, you touched on Caden Proctor. Some question marks. I think he's a good player. I'm going to give it a solid C, average. I don't want to give it a failing grade. I don't want to say that it was something particularly good, but clearly it's a player in high demand because he went a lot higher than what he was projected to go. It's just a matter of whether he can, have the work ethic when he's on his own. You know, Nick Saban criticizing him, I think, was an eye-opener for a lot of people. And then 13, the Ravens take a Ravens pick. You know, Penn State interior offensive lineman Vega Ione, a very athletic player. Guards are not sexy, but I think it was a really solid move. I'm giving that an A-, only because of the position. From a player standpoint, hard to get a better player at that position, but I'm going to give Baltimore an A- for that pick. I think he's going to have a very long and productive career in Baltimore. And 15th, we talked about a value pick. Todd Bowles getting Akeem Mesidor. I'm sorry, Reuben Bain. No surprise, I'm giving that an A. That's a solid A. When I was growing up, that would be a solid 95. Out of 100. Love it.
How could you skip over pick 13?
Oh, I skipped over pick 13. You know why? I was hoping to wipe it from my memory. I can't believe it actually happened. The Rams getting the worst grade that I've ever given in any walk of life. I'm giving this one an F-. It's hard to do that because once you get an F, you're done, right?
Minus.
I'm giving this one an F-. I don't like the player. I don't like the fit. I don't like the spot in the draft. I do not understand it. This was an additional pick that the Rams got from the Falcons trade last year. And amazingly, they drafted as if they were the Falcons and not the Rams. So I'm taking an F- for Ty Simpson going 13 to the Los Angeles Rams.
All right, back on track. It's 16. It's the Jets. I'm going to give this one a solid B. And it's the Kenyon Sadiq pick. We've talked a little bit about it earlier. I like the player. Curious about the fit. But they're infusing talent, and the New York Jets need to do that. So I think that is that's where I'm going to sit with that, a B. 17, the Lions taking Blake Miller. I'm going to give this one a B+ to an A-. I'm going to flirt with the line there. They had to replace Taylor Decker, right? Taylor Decker's not there anymore. They had a clear need. And they address that spot. A-, B+, we're going to flirt with the range there on that one. 18, the Vikings. Manish was, we were talking about them being a loser of the draft, given where they made the selection of Caleb Banks. And I'm going to stick with that. I'm going to say C- on that pick. I think they could have done a lot better at that spot. And we'll move it along. 19, Panthers. I love this pick. I love Monroe Freeling playing there. I'm going to give it an A-. I think it would have been higher if they took an offensive skill position player, like a wide receiver at this position, like the guy who went 20th. But again, addresses a position of need for the Panthers. So A- for the Panthers. And my final pick before I give it back to Manish, it's the 20th pick. The Eagles trade up to take Mekhi Lemon. Again, I'm going to sit at a C because I don't hate the player. I just hate the fact that the Eagles gave up assets when they had a clear, bigger need to address early in this draft at offensive line. They didn't. They trade up. They give up assets to get Mekhi Lemon. Again, see, if I didn't like the player, it would have been down there with an F too. Because if they really just botched that and didn't take that lineman, they would have been worse. But I'm not going to write off Lemon because I'm upset that the Eagles took a receiver over a tackle. So
yeah, hopefully he's not a lemon. Thank you. I'll be here all week. Before I start at 21, I do want to have a fun fact in that Rams pick. The last team to have a reigning MVP quarterback take a quarterback in the following first round of the draft. Reigning MVP quarterback, next draft, draft a quarterback in the first round was 1966. The Green Bay Packers had 33-year-old Bart Starr as the reigning MVP. They drafted somebody named Don Horn, I believe with the 25th overall pick. Horn sat for 2 years, and he made 6 starts. Obviously, that did not work out. We'll see if it works out for the Rams and Ty Simpson. I have my doubts. Let's continue the grading. Steelers, Maxi Konchor, you know, as I said earlier, project, a lot of talent. I'm giving it a solid B. It's a good pick. There is a lot of variance here because you don't know how he's going to develop, how he's going to be coached, but the talent is there. Solid. Give it a solid B. And then one of our value picks at 22 was Akeem Mesidor going to the Chargers. So if I'm saying it's a value pick, I'm giving it an A. Why wouldn't I, right? Ruben Bain also gets an A for the other value pick that we had. 3, the Cowboys, after trading down with the Eagles, UCF edge, Malachi Lawrence had a great testing at the combine. Incredible vertical, a 40-inch vertical. Relentless, great pursuit toward the ball. I'm giving this a B. I think it's a good pick. I don't know what the upside is for him, if it's exceedingly high, but I do think there's a high floor, and it's a solid pick, and that's why I'll give him that grade. The Browns, after taking an offensive lineman, go with Casey Concepcion, the Texas A&M wide receiver, dynamic player with the ball in his hands. Frankly, I think he was the last of the dynamic pass catchers. There's a lot of pass catchers who are going to go in day 2. I don't know if they've got the juice that Casey does, and that's why I'm giving this pick a B+. It's a good pick with the potential of being an A-, but I'm going to give it a B+. Good player. Makes a lot of sense for them given their needs. And then 25th, Bears needed secondary help. They had a lot of defections in free agency. They go with Oregon safety Dylan Thienemann. I would probably have gone with the Toledo safety and McNeil Warren, who's still available entering day 2. But Thienemann, you know, great instincts, great testing at the combine, solid pick. I'm giving this one a solid B.
We nailed that pick on our last mock draft, by the way. We absolutely nailed it. Moving on to 26, the Texans, they trade up. Clear need. We talked about it on the last mock draft. I picked the wrong guard. But the Texans go with Kalen Rutledge. Look, I'm going to give this one a solid B+ because the position of need. I would have gone with the guy I went with in the mock draft, Bosonis. But Texans, again, fill a position of need, which was much needed. So B+ there. Dolphins, 27. This is the pick they traded up. With the pick from the Waddle trade, they end up with cornerback Chris Johnson. B+. Again, position of need filled. Not necessarily the player I would have gone with here, but position of need filled for Jeff Hafley's defense. And, you know, we'll see how it shakes out. Odds are I'm going to be wrong anyways. So, great pick. Yay. Patriots trade up, which I was stunned actually happened. I was fully prepared for a trade back. They trade up, they draft, they end up getting one of the tackles in the draft, and Caleb Lamu, he was a left tackle, did not allow sack last year for Utah. I would not expect him to play left tackle for the New England Patriots, as Elliott Wolf has already come out and said, well, Cambo is going to be the left tackle, but he seems to be the heir apparent, at the very least, to Morgan Moses on the right side. I'm going to give this one an A-. It's hard for me. I mean, maybe a little bit of bias in there. I don't know. But the Patriots had a clear need after what was displayed in the playoffs last year to address their offensive line. And they do that here late in the first round of the draft. 29. The Chiefs on the clock again. They take Clemson defensive tackle Peter Woods. We didn't mock him into the first round here, but it's a clear position of need for Steve Spagnuolo's defense. Chris Jones isn't getting any younger, so adding in another piece, young piece on that defense in the first round is a good move for the Kansas City Chiefs. Another B-plus for me there for that position of need. And Manish, I'm just going to turn it over to you for the last three picks to close out this episode.
Okay, well, the Jets, you know, Omar Cooper, as I said, you know, Jericho Cotchery, in terms of impact, not play style, solid player. They liked him. Who am I to criticize who they liked at wide receiver? I just thought they should have gone defense. I don't like the idea of taking two offensive players. I'm beating a dead horse here. I said it earlier. I'm giving this pick a C-. You know, people might think, well, how can he be a C-? This guy's a good player. It doesn't make that much sense in my estimation, given what they did. I'm giving him a C-. I'm a tough grader on the back end. You know, giving out flowers early on, you know, throwing out A-pluses. It's kind of like if you sit in the front of the class, you're probably going to get a little bit of favoritism from the teacher. If you're sitting in the back, hey, you know what? I'm a tough grader. 31, the Titans traded with the Bills. You know, the Bills, who are one of the losers for you, even though they get an incomplete for me because they didn't actually draft a player. Titans trade back up into the first round. They get a guy who I love, Auburn edge, Keldrick Falk. Young player. He's got a lot of potential. He's got a lot of developing to do, but I think ultimately he can be a difference-making player. And 32, Jadarian Price, I think a lot of people predicted that the Seattle Seahawks would replace Super Bowl MVP Ken Walker with the second Notre Dame running back of the first round. The last time two running backs were taken in the first round from the same team were Felix Jones and Darren McFadden from Arkansas. This is also, by the way, the first time that the first two running backs in a draft were from the same team. Yeah, which is amazing to think about. You thought at some point it would have happened, but Price hasn't had that much work. So it'll be interesting to see how he kind of fits in here in this running back rotation with Zach Charbonnet. But, you know, the talent is clearly there. And in any other draft without Jeremiah Love, Price would have been the first running back taken. So, you know, John Schneider gets a position of need. Not necessarily shocking. I thought they would try to trade down. Maybe they did and didn't get what they wanted. But I'm going to give Price a solid B. I'm going to give Keldrick Falk a B-plus for the Titans at 31.
Love it. That caps it off. That caps off our recap of round one. We hope you enjoyed it. And as always, be sure to give us a follow everywhere you see us, right? I mean, be on X, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook. Drop a comment. Leave a review, leave a 5-star rating, interact with us. Call me an idiot. I don't care. I don't care. I know that. I already know that. That's why I don't know why they gave me a mic, but here I am spouting off some nonsense about the Buffalo Bills and the New England Patriots, but alas. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Between the Tackles podcast, and enjoy the rest of the NFL draft, Manish.
I can't wait to see who the Bills pick.
Go Pats!